Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society. Today's discussion is an introduction to our series on Law and Order. We hope that you enjoy it, and with nothing else to say, let us begin. It's time for another series, everyone. Today, we're starting our series in Law and Order. This will be a special release just because of time. If you have been following our usual schedule of releases, Friday, Monday. But tomorrow, we are starting the series right on because the topic is very time sensitive. So we wanted to release this next topic that we'll be going over tomorrow. That's part of our Law and Order series on Monday, November 5th. And you will know why very soon. But today we're going to kind of give an introduction to the series, a little bit more of the overview and the big picture that we'll be talking about. And again, I'm not alone. We have another co-host with us, Macy McVeigh. So if you go back a couple of episodes ago, Macy was a guest, but now she is a co-host of our podcast. So Macy, how's it going?
It's going well.
So for those of you who don't know Macy, Macy's about to give us a little bit of her life. So go ahead, tell us where you're from, what you've been doing, and what is it, you know, what's in the future for you?
Yeah, so I've kind of grown up all over the place. Was born in California, grew up in the Midwest, and then high school and college I did in the Pacific Northwest. So kind of all over the U.S. I am a pastor in the Oregon Conference and just finishing up my MDiv degree. I'm done in December. And I'm also getting married in December, so I will not be Macy McVeigh for too much longer.
All right, well, we'll have to change that probably in the website and, you know, things like that. But everyone, just welcome Macy, you know, and of course, make sure to go to Instagram and go follow her. We'll be putting the links and putting all of the tags out there. But today, let's get started with the topic. We're going to go over Law and Order. So what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Macy, when you hear the words Law and Order?
Well, I really like cop TV shows, so probably a TV show.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you know, when I hear Law and Order, I always, well, right now in Adventism, of course, we have the whole compliance committee. Yeah. So that's like a thing that really gets into, you know, my brain right away. It's like Law and Order, order is like compliance and all of that. But that's not the vein that we're taking today. We're taking into a little bit different strand, more the political side nature or the civic side of our duties, right? So let's start talking about maybe the state of our civilian world today.
Sure.
You know, let's start talking about how we're interacting. So let's kind of commence with voting, since it's going to be very close by. 2 days from now, a couple of days from now, will be the election. So what do you think is the relationship between Adventism and voting? Let's start with that kind of topic.
Yeah, so I think that as Christians, we first and foremost are citizens of the kingdom of God, and so citizens of heaven. And so that needs to be taken into account when we go to the polls, when we vote. But we are also citizens of earth. And citizens of whatever country we're living in. So in our case, we're in the United States, state of Michigan. And so I think that it's our duty as citizens to go and vote. And as part of that, you know, a lot of us like to complain about what's happening in politics. And to me, you don't really have a voice and don't really deserve to complain, I guess, if you didn't even vote. Like, you need to be, if you're going to complain, like, you have to at least do your part before you get to complain.
Yeah, I resonate with that. I think definitely complaining is, I think, part of the fabric of the United States in the 21st century. I think we it's not necessarily complaining, it's kind of voicing some of the issues that are happening.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, we just had the Pittsburgh mass shooting. And during this mass shooting, like, you know, it's a very bad thing. And for us, at least for me, it's very important that, you know, we make our country, our cities, our towns more secure. So for me, I think that raising awareness to this problem and whatever, you know, regulations need to be made for us to be more secure, I think that can be enacted through my vote. Because I think in the landscape that we have right now, it's so polarized and divisive, but it's also, I think it's primed for change.
You know? Yeah. So I have a question for you in this, kind of a practical question, which is, how do you prepare to vote? Like, what do you do to be ready to be an informed voter? Because I know you well enough to know that you're not just going to go and like vote the party line and fill in, you know, every candidate of X party. So how do you prepare for voting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, you know, and we'll go over this in a future very close episode with Philip Duclos. But, you know, what I really like to do is I like to read, you know, and I think that it's important that I not only read, but I like to be informed about the issues. So, for example, there's different items in the ballot. There's different governors or different senators. So I just, you know, go to their respective websites or, you know, whatever it is. And I make sure to take note. I make sure to see what, if their platform matches with mine. You know, I think that's the most important thing. I mean, the landscape of politics, like, you know, there's so many issues, there's so many things, and not everyone's going to be exactly what I want. But I think that if I go and I say, hey, this is, you agree with, let's say, gun reform, you agree with pro-life or pro-choice, you know, if I agree with pro-life or I agree with pro-choice, then I'm going to vote for that candidate. I think that I'm going to try to find somebody that reflects my ideas more closely. Like, for example, I think that everyone should be able to vote. Well, of course, if you're a citizen, you're 18 years old, like, you know, the general regulations. But I'm saying the whole voter registration, I think it's kind of, I don't know. I didn't grow up with that. In my country, you just go to the poll. So it's like automatic registration. And I think that's like, sometimes it's a turnoff for people when they're trying to go vote, when trying to go do things. It's kind of turn off that, oh, I had to register like 60 days ago or 30 days ago. I can now just go and vote. You know, I think it's much, much easier to just go and vote. It's part of that.
No, I've had a really interesting experience in Michigan because I've always lived in either Washington State or Oregon since I've been of voting age. And there we do mail-in ballots. So I would like sit at my computer and read about people and fill out the ballot as I was learning what their platforms were and things, and I could really take my time over it. And so having to walk into a polling location and vote is something new and different for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just like, I just think that it will be so much easier if we could do, I mean, maybe not through the internet, maybe we can avoid the whole hacking, you know, and all of that. But I think if, like, you know, mail in, like, not paper ballot, like, okay, here's my vote, there you go. Nobody should interfere with that. So I think that that's a little bit of like, but I mean, that's not the only topic that we're going to be covering over this series. Another topic that we'll be kind of going over is the state of how do you relate to authority, you know, and I think that I'm really excited, you know, when we release those podcasts for people that are listening to kind of, you know, get a little bit of a bigger conversation. But we want to start the discussion now. And, you know, I think voting is part of it. Relating to authorities, like, what, you know, I understand authority is there. I understand authority is, quote unquote, necessary to a certain degree. And I need to relate to it respectfully, but I can challenge it. And I think voting is especially a very important area to challenge. But let's move into a little bit of a different topic as we continue talking about, you know, this overview that we'll be doing is authority as a whole. How do you feel about it? How do you feel of our, like, you know, our government or like the structure that we have? Maybe we can even talk about church a little bit. Like, you know, how do we relate to that? Because I think the Bible, and even as Adventists, right, we have this authority view that is very, just submit to it. You know, but there are instances that I think we need to challenge, you know, and I mean, we do that in the United States by voting. But sometimes, you know, not like a super revolution, but, you know, small change, you know, and big change in that. So how do you see authority in your personal view?
Yeah, so I've never really thought very much about authority. I've always been a rule follower and a people pleaser, so I was never like the rebellious kid who was like, I don't want to do that because you told me to. But I went in high school, and for a year of my high school, I studied in Austria at Bogenhofen, our Adventist boarding academy there. And as part of that program, we did a lot of traveling and touring and historical sites in Austria and in Germany. And through those tours and those historical sites, it really made me think about authority and think about government, because Austria and Germany have this history of the Nazi Party and of World War II and of all these sites where horrific things happened. And it makes you kind of take a step back and think, like, let's avoid that and look at your own government and say, you know, the people of Germany, when they first elected Hitler, were so excited about him because he was going to bring a new era of prosperity. And they could have never imagined at that point the things that he would later go on to champion. And so, you know, do we get carried away in our fervor about things? Or are we taking a step back in the moment when we might be excited about a candidate, or we might be excited about some new innovation that's happening with our local fire department or our local police department or whatever it could be? Are we able to take that step back and say, now, what are the logical consequences?
Right. Because, I mean, I agree with you. And at the same time, I'm like, I'm looking at it from a different perspective, because sure. I guess as a male, to a certain degree, I mean, we have been in power for a long time. The male race, I'm not trying to, you know, say it like that, but in the sense of, like, you know, most politicians that you see are males, you know, and, like, I think it's instilled, like, you know, as a boy, I was always told, like, you can, you know, like, grab power, like, you can get to that point. I think it's such a, maybe as a human, you know, not even males, but I think it's more exerted in the male person, or, like, the male individual, you know, it's more like it
happens. Or at least in, like, the upbringing.
Yeah, I think it's just, like, you know, that this whole, like, oh, rawr, like, you know, like, you're the leader, you're, like, you know, it's, like, kind of, like, and I think we need to work to give that kind of mentality of leadership, all-encompassing, egalitarianism, like, you know, as a whole. But going back to kind of, like, the authority topic that you were kind of touching on, is that as a person, it's so easy for me to be seduced by power. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, when I was the pastor, the youth pastor, one of the churches here in Michigan, right? It was so easy for me to say, well, I'm the pastor, and boom, that's it. You know, I'm not going to care what you say. I'm just going to do it my way because I have the power. So I think when it comes to authority and that relationship, for me, is submission is good as long as I know that the person is not an autocrat, or, like, you know, is just trying to benefit themselves.
As long as the person is trustworthy.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of, like, and your example is so clear, because it's like, at first in Germany, the kingdom, you know, because it was like Austria, Germany, and all of that had to separate fully and partitions and whatever, you know, historical. Go read your books.
Google
it. Yeah, of course, Google it. But the first part, like, you know, the election of Hitler, it was like such a populist movement. We're going to be great.
Well, and I think, you know, the reason that all started was because people saw their government as failing them. Mm. And I look around and I feel like there are ways that our government is failing us. If you look at the crisis in Flint, Michigan, which we heard a lot about, and then we haven't heard anything about, but it's still ongoing.
Yeah, it still happens.
They still cannot drink the water coming out of their taps. There are still doctors saying, not even sure you should bathe in it.
Wow.
So our government has failed the city of Flint, Michigan. And if you look at, you know, other things that happen in our society, there have been a lot of shootings of young Black men in the last few years who were not being violent, who did not in any way provoke that. Our government is failing us in some of these regards. And so if you look around, you can see, you know, that a populist uprising could be on the horizon. And how can we fix some of those things, maybe through our vote, maybe through running for office, maybe through other ways of political engagement, charities, foundations, and different things that we can be a part of to fill the gaps where government is not doing what government either should do or what we think it should do.
Yeah, you touched on one very important thing, and I think that's the idea of failing. You know, the government can't fail. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes at least when a lot of people start quoting Bible verses and they're like, well, you know, like David or Solomon, they were great kings. Or then you go to the New Testament and they start pulling verses from Romans 13 and Paul and submission to authority. I think that the vision of authority there has to do with government that is effective. And even if it's not super effective, that is semi-moral, like, you know, that adheres to an ethical standard, to a moral standard.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of what you have been mentioning, especially with the policing mm-hmm. issue, which we may touch on a little bit more, is that I personally don't feel safe anymore. And it's not necessarily because intrinsically I regard police as evil, but it's just like, every time I see a shooting, every time I see, you know, people being killed that are innocent, when I'm on my car and I'm driving, and I mean, I don't think anyone feels a sense of protection when you get stopped by a cop.
Yeah, you usually know you've done something wrong, yeah. And you're not excited about it.
Yeah, like, you know, I think that when I'm driving in the highway or, you know, in the freeway, and I'm going 60 and I see a cop behind me, like, I automatically, even though I know that, you know, nothing may happen, I may not lose my life, there's this sense of, like, you know, being uptight. And I don't like that. You know, I really don't. I really wish that our police was portrayed differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not portrayed, but that they acted differently so that they could be portrayed in a more positive manner. Like, for example, I think I saw a video recently that went over a policeman stopping by. You know, there was this child that was losing their life, and he, like, drove the child in his car to the nearest hospital. And, like, you know, it was great. It was awesome because, you know, it shows me that there are policemen that do want to do the right thing. But at the same time, like, you know, by one that does the right thing, you have maybe, like, I don't know, 20, 30 others that are not, that are profiling, that are, you know, incarcerating or detaining people for the wrong reason. And I think that's such a widespread issue. I think that we have a problem in America and also in the Adventist Church of not firing incompetent people, because these are incompetent cops, or they're incompetent, you know. I don't think we will not fire an incompetent doctor, for example.
Sure.
You know, and both professions deal with life, literally. One is like the restoring of life, and one is like pretty much it can be the taking of life or the protection of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in America, we need to be okay with the fact of letting go people that are incompetent.
Also, yeah, I think that we should be okay with failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing, like, we recognize, oh, our government is failing, or the police are failing us. But when we see it on, like, a system-wide level, we can recognize it very well, and we're like, we need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see it on a personal level, we don't like to acknowledge, well, that individual
mm-hmm.
is failing. Jose is failing. We need to replace him.
Yes, I am failing.
No.
Especially classes right now.
So we don't like to point the finger at individuals. And that's a very human thing, right? You don't want to, as a human, admit failure. Even if you can, like, see it in yourself, it's not something we want to admit. And as humans, we like power. So that combination of liking power and not wanting to admit our own failures creates a very dangerous dynamic. Especially when you are an individual who's in power in some position, like a uniform, like a police officer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking of the system that we have kind of created, because, you know, our church kind of models society. And society, to a certain degree, reflects some of the values of the church. You know, but when it comes to electing leaders, or when it comes to just straight up just keeping accountable, You know, because I think part of the law and part of keeping the law and being in order with our society as Christians is part of keeping that society accountable mm-hmm. to the promises, to the things that they have said that they will do. Yeah. You know, so I think that part of the authority structure is just that check and balances. I really like that about the United States, actually, because in other countries, you have less check and balances mm-hmm. and you don't have that ability to like, hey, you're doing a bad job. We're going to take you out of office. It's more like you're doing a bad job, but the president will just be like, well, shut you up. Like, you know, and that never happens. So,
yeah, I like the fact that we have checks and balances in the American political system. When I look at how I interact with the American system, though, I wonder if I should have personal checks and balances. To check if I am actually in line with my own beliefs. Because especially right now in American politics, we're so polarized that it's very easy to say, oh, well, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, and to almost lose your Christianity in the midst of the party system. Mm. And so I love the example of Daniel in the Old Testament because he works within the Babylonian society. He is part of the palace. He is one of the palace officials working for a foreign king in Babylon who does not believe in God. Yet he stays faithful to God. He follows the rules unless they negate his belief in God. Mm. So when it comes down to it, we all know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And when it comes down to, am I going to follow the king or am I going to follow God? He always goes with God. But when he can follow the king, when it doesn't go against what God has said, then he follows the king and he serves him faithfully. And I think that that is a wonderful model for how we should interact with our governments and with the law and order in our society, which is, if we can interact with them positively in ways that don't go against the principles presented in God's word, then we should absolutely 100% do that.
The thing is that, as I hear you, is like, I feel like at the church level, we need better interaction with our society because we don't interact. Mm-hmm. We like shy away from it because I think we have bought into this mentality that our mission is like a spiritual aspect, teaching the doctrines, making sure that people go from cradle roll to what's the last one? I never grew up in the system, but it's like
high school teen. Sabbath school.
Young adult Sabbath school. There you go. So like, you know, from cradle roll to young adult Sabbath school, and just make sure that they know how to do church. You know, how to come to church, read their Bibles, pray. But we never teach them that the Bible is replete, like it's full of examples of people that work with the government, with, you know, the government of their time. Like, I mean, even Moses, like, you know, he was working, you know, with the other nations, like, you know, kind of like, well, inviting them to come into the community of Israel, right? But they set up a camp, they set up a system, they set up a, you know, a way to relate for the civilian world, not only the spiritual arena. And I think that the compartmentalization of society versus religion has been a huge detriment to the Adventist church.
Yeah, I think that we've kind of compartmentalized it into we live our secular lives 6 days of the week, and then sundown, Friday night, we start our spiritual lives. Mm-hmm. And that's just a Sabbath thing, but that's not what we should be doing. It should be integrated into all of our life.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just like if my spiritual life is not part of my social life, my political or whatever you want to call it, my civilian life, then it's worthless. I mean, even Jesus, I think of Jesus as a figure that was against, you know, the politics of the time. He was trying to restore people, the rights of women, the rights of children, the bringing union between the Gentiles and the Jews to a certain degree. He didn't, you know, completely do it because probably he would have been killed earlier just because, you know, there were some other, you know, harder divisions, harder walls per se in between the Jews and the Gentiles. But he definitely gives like a manifesto, right, that says, well, this is my kingdom, you know, in my kingdom everyone's equal, everyone's valuable, and you need to work with all people. And I think that as a church we usually shy away from that. I don't see a lot of pastors going into their local representatives, going into the Senate, going into, like, you know, speak for not only for the church, but for people. You know, because at the end of the day, like, the church speaks for people. It doesn't, it's not about the religious liberty. I think we emphasize that a lot in the Adventist Church, but we need to do a better job at emphasizing that, hey, we're here to speak for the people.
Yeah, so if you look at, you know, the foundation of the Israelite nation in Abraham, Abraham's call is that God says, I will bless you so you can be a blessing to all nations. And then by the time, you know, we get to Moses and the Exodus, and that's still the vision, to set up Israel as a nation, to bless other nations, to be a model nation, that everyone else can see that if you follow God, you will be blessed, and then you can be a blessing. And then we get to Jesus' time, and they've forgotten it. They've lost the calling. They've lost the vision. They see their role as being the special, separate people who don't interact with the other nations because they're not pure. Mm. And we reclaim that vision with Jesus. He calls us, you know, go therefore and preach to all nations. Go be a blessing to all nations. And again, reiterates that call. And Paul in Hebrews says, we are heirs of the promise of Abraham. So we're heirs of that promise, but we're also heirs of that blessing and that calling to be a blessing to all nations. And so if you look at that and you apply that to Adventism in the 21st century, our churches in every town, our goal should be, yes, to spread the gospel, but also to be a blessing to our communities.
I think that I want to kind of, like, because you made a little bit of separation, and I kind of want to push back into that, because it's like the gospel is spreading, like, you know, the good news in the gospel.
Absolutely.
Like you know, in that sense.
I just don't want to say, like, just being a blessing is the same thing as preaching the gospel. Yes, they go hand in hand.
But isn't it?
They do. But I think that if you say just be a blessing, people will be like, oh, well, you're not wanting to preach the truth. You're not wanting to share.
Well, but isn't the truth part of the social context?
Yes, absolutely. But I think we need to do, quote unquote, both, because we have drawn this division in our Adventist minds of sharing the truth is one thing and blessing is another. So yes, they should be the same thing.
Okay, so I think that's
my
point.
They should be the same thing, but we often don't think of them as the same thing. Okay. So I'm just wanting to emphasize that, like, yes, it's part of the gospel. The gospel is part of blessing. But we need to have both of those halves, as it were, working hand in hand.
I guess we're using just the vocabulary that we're having inherited as a, you know, the division of whole, the whole, like, division between, like, secular, religious, and, like, you know, more of that. Because for me, it's like, the gospel is the blessing. The blessing is the gospel. And, like, when you're, I think I was reading Resident Aliens by Stanley Hauerwas. And in that book, he says, when you disconnect, like, the gospel, mm-hmm. from the blessing that you give to others, then you are doing a disservice to the gospel automatically, because you're saying that the community, the tradition, the church in which you live is not relevant for that society. But instead, you're just putting, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not giving exact quotes, but Hauerwas makes this point that living this ethical life, like, you know, bringing all of these blessings and stuff like that, cannot be done from a theoretical standpoint. It has to be done from example. And I think that that's, for me, that's how you, I mean, that's how the gospel is lived out, especially in our church, where we emphasize mission a lot. Again, like, we emphasize mission in the sense of mission is doctrine, mission is baptizing, instead of the multifaceted mission that involves social aspects, that involves spiritual aspects, that involves personal developments, that involves even political, not partisan, but political engagement, you know? And I think that all of that's part of the gospel. I mean, there is no, at least in my opinion, there's no quote unquote social gospel and they're like right gospel or whatever. The gospel just encompasses so many areas because it's the good news that Jesus brought about his kingdom. So I guess, like, I agree with you. And at the same time, like, I wish that we did more unity in our vocabulary, in the language that we use.
Yeah, so there's a book I love called I Am a Follower by Leonard Sweet. And in that it talks about, you know, we put such a prize in our society on being a leader. Mm. But as Christians, we are followers. We are followers of Christ. And if we look at Jesus as the model of what Christian mission and evangelism should be, then we see it as a unity. There is meeting people's needs. There is teaching. There is preaching. There is being a friend. This is all part of being a follower, being a follower of Jesus. And it's all one thing. It is sharing the gospel. It is meeting needs. They are the same thing. But we don't always perceive that in our society.
Yeah, I think we don't always do it. And I mean, that's just part of like looking at, you know, our different ways or different ways of interaction between society and spiritual life. You know, we, like you say, we go 6 days, we live our civilian lives. And then on the seventh day, we come and worship instead of like, well, our worship is lived throughout the week.
So going back to voting, where we started, I wonder how we can integrate faith and voting. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, that's hard because, I mean, that gets into the whole, like, religion, like, the whole political and religion division. Like, you know, the whole, like, if religion isn't politics, politics isn't religion, and we definitely don't want that. I think that mainly, and we talked about this, I mean, as I don't want to give it away, all of it, you know, because like, this is just
an introduction. You probably get into it in the other podcast.
Yeah, we get into it in the podcast that we'll be releasing tomorrow with Philip. And I think for me, mainly when it comes to voting, you know, this idea of understanding the world, in which we live through how we talk with our politicians. I think because we vote 4 times, you know, that's it. 4 times every 4 years. It's like midterms is twice if you vote the primaries and the general election. And then you vote other 2 times for the presidential election. So that's not a lot, you know, and I think that every day it's better when you do it. But we'll get into that tomorrow. So tune in for tomorrow's podcast. But well, as we start closing in, Macy, any final thoughts on like the law and order situation? How do you relate as an Adventist to politics? So.
Yeah, I think that what I started out with saying is that our citizenship as members of God's kingdom needs to come first. Bonhoeffer has a wonderful quote where he says, I am a German, but I am a Christian first. And if we look at ourselves as Christians first, as Seventh-day Adventists first, I think we should let that inform our political positions rather than the other way around.
Right. I will just make a last mention with this will close is that for me, I agree with you. And I'll just put it kind of like the other way around in the sense of like I am a Christian, period. A Christian that goes through the Seventh-day Adventist experience, you know, just because I think that just saying that, you know, just identifying ourselves, yes, we have a special message, right? Advent message. We're trying to be different. And that's why I believe, and that's why this podcast exists, that Adventism is disruptive in nature. But at the same time, it's because we're Christians.
Absolutely.
It's because, you know, that Christianity is the foundation of everything. We just emphasize or we take our experience through the Advent movement moving towards the second coming of Christ.
That was our introduction to our Law and Order series. We hope that you enjoy our thoughts, and if you have anything that you want to push back or you want to discuss with us, please email us or go to our website or also go into our social media pages. Tune in tomorrow for our episode on voting, and make sure not to miss and share with others. Thank you for listening today. We appreciate that you have taken the time to listen to our podcast and ask that you share it with others. Please leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying our content, we want to invite you to consider contributing to our cause by becoming a patron, where you will receive exclusive content, have the ability to sit down with the Disruptive Adventism team, and ask relevant questions for Adventism and society. If you're interested in contributing, head to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. Another avenue for contribution is to purchase our merchandise through Amazon or tpublic.com. You can find the links to our merchandise on our Facebook or Instagram pages. We also hope that our content has intrigued you a little bit
and that you decide to stay around for future podcasts. If you have any comments, feedback, or a topic you would like us to discuss, please go to our website at www.disruptiveadventism.org or shoot us an email to disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We're eager to engage in discussions about any matter, so don't hesitate to contact us. This has been it for today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.